Hi, I'm Ruby.
And I'm Cody.
And this is The Swirl. Hey, Cody, how are ya?
I'm doing okay. I'm just going through some notes and getting my hair for it together, and we have a very relatable Q&A that I picked out of the grab bag today, so
I'm excited. It's a business. Yeah, I really look forward to our little talks, our chat. So, well, I had to update my resume over the week, not because I'm looking for a new job, but just when you have clients, sometimes they like to look at your resume. So I went through this whole process, and my husband's also updating his resume, and we had this kind of crazy conversation, which was, what are some things that you wish you could put on your resume, but just like wouldn't make sense or be professional, but are things you might want your employer to know. So like, for example, one of them for me is that I am a desperate people pleaser. Like, I like when people are pleased with my work. I love positive reinforcement. I like when people respond well to my work and my work ethic. And I like being depended upon, but it's really hard to kind of put that on a resume.
For sure. I think we all have skills that don't translate on a resume. Like, everyone knows that you shouldn't have typos or grammatical errors, and nobody cares if you're married or if you have 13 cats.
Right.
And again, if I was an employer, I'd probably want that information.
But those are some red flags.
It's so funny. I went on an interview once where on the resume, and I can't remember how old I was, but I had sort of like listed some of my hobbies, and I remember the interviewer just being like, that's kind of like bizarre, right? Because like, what are you going to put on your resume? Like a photo of your child to remind them that you have mouths to feed?
Like, yeah, no, it does get weird because I think there's like this fine line and it's shifting constantly because you want to be like, I'm a responsible adult. But I also think too, in this day and age of like digital identity and our social media, we want to be seen as 360-degree people. And I think millennials, we hear all the time about work-life balance. And then I think it's also important to know if somebody runs marathons. I think that that shows you a lot of self-discipline, that a person has the discipline to get up and train and do things like run a marathon. Because I think that these are windows into people's character, you know? And so it's kind of funny, like, you know, what are some of your things that you would love to, like, say on your resume but maybe wouldn't translate? Do you have any that are kind of like...
Sure, and it's funny, too. Like, I've had a job for a few years now. When I think about putting a resume together, it's like, ugh, I just can't imagine that cover letter with those buzzwords like...
Oh my god, I hate cover letters!
Go-getter, and think outside the box, and synergy.
Those words stop having meaning after a while, right? Like, you're like, it just might as well be like, bah.
I think I would just write internet, and then when they ask me about it, I'd be like, just internet. I do that.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm on it. I'm about it. I'm doing it.
You've joked about me being thoughtful, but the ability to overanalyze and freak out about every situation, like, that's what I would write down. Like... I would go, the ability to overanalyze and freak out after every situation.
Right.
And then when they asked me, I would say, look, the flip side of this is that you would have a person who, like, strategizes every potential angle, which essentially makes me a human pro-con list.
Yes. And those people, the kind of people, like, who are like that are always your catch-all. They're your net. They're the people who are your stopgap between disaster and putting something out that maybe you don't want to put out because you haven't thought about.
You wouldn't have the, like, constant issues that Dove Soap has if I was on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, nah, bitch.
Right. Because you're already anticipating the worst case scenario. You're like, what if people think this is racist? And they're like, nah, that's not going to happen. And Cody's like, no, for real. What if people think this is racist?
No, Pepsi. I don't think that one can of this sugar water will stop racism.
Right. Oh my God. There have been so many of those these days.
Yeah. How about you? Do you have one?
Yeah. Oh, no, for me, it's definitely that, like, I thrive on, I'm a people pleaser, and I especially like it when authority is pleased with me, so I'm a teacher's pet. I think that's, like, the simplest way to describe it. I am Hermione Granger level, like, teacher's pet. Like, I like it when you ask me a question, and I know the answer. Or if you need somebody to cover your shift, I am about that life if I can make it happen. So I'm definitely but it's kind of weird to, you wouldn't want to put that on a resume, because like you're saying, there's like the other side of that coin is teachers' pets are annoying as hell. And so and listen, I know, cause I've been one my whole life and I've been told how annoying I am. So, it's like not something you want to be broadcasting about yourself, but there are benefits to that, you know? Teachers' pets, we're go-getters and we like to know what's going on. We like to be in the middle of all of the action. And it's good to have somebody who's on your team like that, who is an over-communicator, who knows what's going on, who's trying to communicate with all of the moving pieces. But on the flip side of that, do you need 17 emails about one project? Like, probably not. Do you want to have 700 questions asked about something? Maybe not. But so that's definitely something I would love to, you know, how do you describe that in a way on a resume that is putting you in a good light.
Oh, for sure. I once went on an interview where I called myself a nerd whisperer. And it went over really well. Right. But it also made me a little too confident I could keep going to that well. Because humor is a tough thing to pull off.
Yeah.
And I think if you have that in a resume or on a cover letter, like you're pushing it.
Right.
In an interview, I think you can, you know, I think it's like when you first begin chatting, maybe a good opening joke is good, but even that's dangerous. I'm always trying to like leverage how much of this personality do I show you.
Right. And I think the interesting thing too is in person, you are able to read an audience and see what their physical, you and I think are empaths to a almost like, scary degree. So you can watch people's body language and see if they're into what you're saying. It's really hard to do that on paper. And then my husband says all the time, you know, like, in the workplace, we've really gotten into this mode where we text or email each other, but it's hard to be sarcastic or funny or direct over email. And sometimes it feels like people are being mean when really they're just, you know, trying to get one thing off of their to-do list in their email boxes. It is challenging. And I think there's a bunch of studies that suggest that humor is one of the best predictors of how well you're going to gel with somebody in a romantic relationship as well as professionally, because humor is one of the first points where you can tell somebody's values. And we don't often like think about it like that, but I think about the people who you like to be around. They're the people who think you're hilarious. They're not the people who are like, oh, like, that's not funny. And so it's about comfort level with certain topics. It's comfort level with certain values. And I think if people find you amusing or funny, and they're laughing with you, not at you, it's a really good predictor of how well you're going to work with that person. But it is so hard to know on a resume. And then the other thing I find frustrating is when you are applying for jobs, it feels like these days people don't want a one-size-fit-all situation. They really want to feel like they're the one number one special person in your life. Mm-hmm. But if you're applying to like something that you saw on Indeed or Monster, it's kind of like writing a love letter to somebody on Tinder. Like the chances are, the numbers are against you. You're going to likely get rejected. So it doesn't make sense to write a specific love letter to every single job you're applying to when you're just really trying to get your resume out in front of somebody who maybe will think of you for something.
So you think you're supposed to just send the sup girl message then too?
Right. Well, I mean, so
to whom it may concern, you'll never read this.
Well, I mean, that's how you start to feel, right? Like, it's hard out there. It's a buyer's market. And I feel like the American workforce especially, like, really doesn't want to see you as a whole person. And they really just want somebody who's going to show up, do the work. They're not looking for best friends. And, like, even as much as they'll market it as that, it's not the case. Like, sure. You're an employee. You're there for a purpose. But it is. It's kind of like dating, and it's like dating on a wholesale level. And I guess there's a fine line, right? Like, if it's your dream job, you'll probably take the time to outline it and really, you know, customize what you're writing. But I hate writing a freaking cover letter. It's really uncomfortable, and I always feel like we said at the beginning, those words stop meaning things after a while.
Absolutely. So, do you have one last skill that wouldn't translate on a resume? And then I'll share mine to close this out.
I would say I'm a multitasker. I really like to be, problem solving and have multiple balls in the air, which even though from the outside it might look like total chaos, for me it's exciting, it's invigorating, and it helps me get it gets my motor running to like be juggling lots of different deadlines and things. I really get hyped up about it. What about you? What's yours? Wow.
I mean, that's much more thoughtful than the list I created. Mine, my last one says, I can suck cookie dough through a bendy straw. It's clearly not going to translate on a resume.
I mean, who doesn't love Office?
That's who I am. And, you know, I have a life outside of the office.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. I mean, I can find inappropriate humor in almost any situation. I also am the queen of the well-placed F-bomb. I've worked in kitchens and on political campaigns, so that's definitely one of my talents. I really feel like now I should put that on my resume. But I mean, if you follow me on social, I think you get that gist, right? Like,
I just assume that if you put that on in your skill section, you're at least getting a call back so they can look you up and down.
You know what? Maybe that's the secret. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe the mistake we've been making is we've been trying to be too professional, and we've kind of like, not whitewashed is maybe not the right word, but we've kind of watered down our crazy intense awesomeness. Maybe the answer is that we really lean into our freakishness.
I'm just letting them know. They're going to a sexual harassment suit. All right, we'll be back in just a moment with this week's Here For It. This is the time where we talk about all the things that are tickling our fancies for the week. It's a little segment that I like to call Here For It. What's your Here For It this week?
So, all right, hold on.
Is that another burp? Such a lady.
Listen, I've been sucking this smoothie through a straw. So a couple weeks ago, Lin-Manuel Miranda released an all-star recording of a song called Almost Like Praying, which was a tribute song for Puerto Rico with the goal of raising money for the Hispanic Federation's Unidos Disaster Relief Fund. And if you haven't heard the song, you definitely have to check it out. It's amazing. It's a sampling of a song from West Side Story that is called Maria. And of course, just to remind you, the hurricane that devastated Puerto Rico was named Maria. And Lin-Manuel Miranda, being our Broadway king, called up Stephen Sondheim and Leonard Bernstein and asked for permission to sample the song. So Lin-Manuel Miranda wrote the song immediately after the hurricane, and the lyrics of the song sound like they're Spanish. It's in Spanish, but the lyrics of the song are all 78 cities and towns in Puerto Rico. And the idea was because after the hurricane, on Twitter, Lin-Manuel Miranda was hearing from people, and news reports out of Puerto Rico were saying that a lot of people were talking about San Juan, but they weren't talking about the other cities and regions in Puerto Rico that were also devastated, and they felt kind of lost in the shuffle. And so what he did was he listed every single one, all 78 towns, and they recorded it in less than a week. And Rita Moreno, who was in West Side Story, is on the track. Juan Luis Guerra, Gilberto Santa Rosa, Gina Rodriguez, J-Lo, Mark Anthony, Daddy Yankee, and Big Joe are all on this track, and it's fantastic, and I love it, and it has a salsa beat, it has the steel drums, it's very Caribbean, which speaks to my soul as a girl who grew up in Miami. Now, of course, the song is fantastic, it's amazing, and I love it. However, I cannot listen to the song without crying. So, if I wanted to get a little bit of my Caribbean Latin flavor, where would I look? And of course, again, we'd have to look to Lin-Manuel Miranda. So that's all to say, I am here for Almost Like Praying, but I am also here for this wonderful Spotify playlist that Lin-Manuel Miranda put together that is called I Relish Your Wit, I Salsa Your Face. And it is a list of amazing, wonderful, beautiful salsa songs. And the name of the playlist, of course, I can't let this moment go by without noting that it is a line from Parks and Recreation. So I'm about that life. But this lovely list of salsa music ranges from classics and legends like Celia Cruz and Willie Colon, all the way to barrio feminist anthem Ese Hombre by La India. Salsa is a really amazing genre of music. It was born in New York during the 1950s as a result of migration. Willie Colon, who was a salsa...
Ruby.
What?
You're here for it to become, like, essays.
What, oh, I know.
Like,
I know, but I wanted, right, but so, okay. But hold on. So the long, the point of all of this is to say.
Dissertation over here.
I know, but it's, okay, so the point of all of this is to say, one, Lin-Manuel Miranda is amazing. Two, Almost Like Praying is amazing. Three, salsa music is amazing, and you should check out this Spotify list, because salsa music is a political music, and it's beautiful music, and you should listen to it.
Okay.
I just got really excited about salsa music.
No, I understand. We just, like, last week's Henry Louis Gates is, like, just 10 minutes of, like...
Is it? Then, I'm sorry. Yeah,
it just was like, okay, we have to land the plane.
I'm excited. So, the point is, salsa music is awesome. It has a deep history. You should listen to this music. It's awesome. I got really excited. And it really came from the whole Almost Like Praying thing, and I wanted to explain what that was. Because, because if any of our listeners haven't listened to it, they should listen to it.
Yes.
Sorry. Did it make sense?
It does. I'm mind mapping. I think it makes sense.
Okay.
The track is actually, considering it's a sample, I mean, aside from, like, Hard Knock Life, it's very rare that you'll hear a sample of a Broadway tune in popular culture.
Totally.
Instead of, like, it just being remade entirely. So to have this, like, fresh kind of twist on it and so many different sides of the culture. You have Fat Joe, and then, you know, on a completely different end of the spectrum, you'll have, like, is it Gloria Estefan?
Gloria Estefan is on it.
And it literally, I was reading an interesting article where Lin-Manuel said that it almost came together through a game of telephone.
Mm-hmm.
He mentioned that he received a phone call from an actress who said, like, oh, don't you have this person's number? And he was like, no, I don't. And then suddenly he kept getting bigger stars because they all just started sort of chatting with each other.
Which is sort of funny because you'd think Lin-Manuel Miranda, of anybody, would have everybody's number in his Rolodex, right?
You would think so. But he does now. There's so many stars on that track. It's ridiculous. And the track is very good. I've only been able to listen to it once or twice because, again, it's I think this is going to go down in history as a pretty monumental failure of the U.S. government.
Oh, yeah.
To protect its citizens.
Yes. Sorry.
Here, you know, we're in this different era now where I think you can support in many different ways. And I think I saw Lin-Manuel Miranda on MSNBC and he said, yes, you can buy the track, but you can also stream it. And that also is raising money. So I think that if you are someone who's limited by money, there are other ways that you can show your support. One of those ways is sharing the track and letting people know about it. So let it make money. And thank you for your here for it.
What are you here for, Cody, this week?
All right. Well, this week I'm here for Armie Hammer, who many people know as...
When aren't you here for Armie Hammer?
That is a great question, actually. I mean, for many of you, he's, you know, the two halves of the Winklevoss twins. Mm-hmm. And for other people, I'm trying to think of what other movies I've noticed him in. But he is a very, very fine, attractive gentleman. He's in a new forthcoming gay-themed film that's called Call Me By Your Name. And this social media era that we're in, people just seem to figure out a way to cling to a theme. And there was a clip of him from the film dancing to the Psychedelic Furs 1982 track called Love My Way. That's the year I was born, actually.
Mm.
And now it spawned this Twitter account that shows that the clip can be set to just about any song. So if you've ever seen, like, the Beyonce and Whitney always on beat videos where contemporary songs are, you know, set against clips of them dancing. He is on a dance floor in his, you know, Converse sneakers and his high socks, wearing shorts, and he's dancing to the psychedelic first track.
And he is feeling it. He is feeling it.
Well, this Twitter account has taken the track and set it to songs like What's Up by the Four Non Blondes and Look at What You Made Me Do by Taylor Swift and Bohemian Rhapsody by Queen and Rihanna's Bitch Better Have My Money, which, you know, from listening to our show, is a big fave of ours.
Yes.
And then even songs like The Killers, Mr. Brightside, or even the Game of Thrones main title theme. And for some reason, Armie Hammer just is dancing his little heart out. And the more songs that are added to this, essentially, playlist, the more hilarious this 40-second clip is to me. So I'm here for it. You know who isn't here for it is James Woods.
Why?
He has been on this big kick about how horrible this gay film is, where this 24-year-old American scholar spends the summer in northern Italy, where he falls in love with a 17-year-old Jewish boy. And he went on to talk about how nasty and degenerate this whole thing is, and then Amber Tamblyn clapped back and said, hey, you hit on me when I was underage.
This was that movie. I got it. Yeah. James Woods needs to know when art is meant for him and when it's not, and he needs to keep his damn mouth shut. Yeah, I've seen this.
Needs to have several seats.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I've seen this clip, and I think by far my favorites are the songs that are like the quiet, you know, unexpected ones, and Armie Hammer is just feeling it. It's okay. Pretty great. It makes me really, really want to see the movie. So Armie,
I'm not just sipping now because I'm being shady, but yeah.
But you are. So Armie Hammer, we're here for it. We're always here for Armie Hammer, and you guys will be retweeting some of our favorites from that great Twitter account.
Yes,
of Armie Hammer dancing to many different songs.
It's true, and I wouldn't mind if he danced into my life. All right, everybody, we'll be back in just a few moments. This week's Q&A is insanely relatable, and I can't wait to talk to Ruby about it.
Amazing, amazing.
This is the home stretch. You're doing great. And we're back.
We're back.
You want to introduce me for the Q&A? Starring Cody C.
Now is the time on Sprockets where we dance. No, now is the time on The Swirl, where we solve all of your problems with
salsa and merengue. Shaking my chichis.
Where we attempt to solve all of your problems with terrible and sometimes good advice. So now we're about to hear from Cody, who has this week's Q&A. Hey.
And this week's Q&A comes from Who Can I Trust? Girl, don't I know it. She writes, Dear Ruby and Cody, I've been going through a rough time at work and at home after my husband of 3 years and I separated. It's been hard to concentrate or properly devote myself to my job, but I am working on getting my head back in the game. It used to help being able to confide in my best friend, but she can no longer be trusted to keep our discussions to herself. Mm. At parties, she interrupts people while telling stories to finish their gossip. She seems to pride herself on being in the know at all times. I don't ever remember it being this bad before in terms of her behavior. When my husband first moved out, she was the first person I told, even before my parents. The next day, I received emails and texts from not close friends, but just regular casual acquaintances offering to help. The gesture was nice, but I hadn't even wrapped my head around the info, let alone was I ready to discuss with near strangers. When I asked her about it, she said matter-of-factly, everyone was going to find out eventually anyway. Now, I have to couch conversations with her by saying, this is between you and me, and pray she honors that, or risk not having a sounding board at all. What can I do to reel my friend back in? Love the show, Jane is a G, signed, Who Can I Trust?
Wow. Oof. That's not a good friend. And I feel like there's certain people who are just beyond rehabbing. Like, that are just mm-hmm. not worth getting them house trained, because it kind of feels like they're already way off base.
Right. Have you ever accidentally told someone's secret?
Well, yes. I have a very big mouth.
But I mean, it's a horrible feeling.
Right. And
when you have kind of like broken somebody's trust.
Yes. Yes. And
I wouldn't be that cavalier.
Well, and I think I have, when I was younger and less mature, I was this person. I kind of liked to know what was going on and tell people's business. And, I liked being the center of attention, by telling other people's business, which, I mean, that's being really real. Like, I think I liked the attention it gave me to feel like, and the power it gave me to feel like I knew something. But now that I'm older and I've had experiences where I've broken friendships based on, telling people's business, where I've hurt people, not just like where we're not good friends, but I've actually hurt people. And I've learned a lot from those experiences to now know, that if it's not your business and it's not your truth to tell, then you really shouldn't have it come out of your mouth. And I think going through infertility treatment and struggling with that and going through some of the things that I've gone through, I know that I wouldn't want somebody else to try to tell my side of the story. If that makes sense. And so I'm very, very conscientious about when people tell me stuff, that is not my news to share. So, I think you have to, there's a couple things. One, you're responsible for your own information and your own story. If you continue to tell this person your business, you know that they are likely going to spread that stuff around, right? So you have to take responsibility for who you're sharing your heart with. And I don't think that this person deserves that from you. And number two, if you have to decide if this person is worth rehabbing and giving house training. It doesn't sound to me like they are, because if the first thing that they did when you told them something like heavy as you're separating from your husband is turn around and tell acquaintances of yours, that is not okay. That's not even like, oops, I didn't, that was not something I should have said, or oops, that was not an oops. That's like intentionally sucking at life and friendship.
Yeah.
So those are kind of my pointers there. But you can decide that this person is worth saving, but you really have to be thoughtful about that, because it doesn't feel like they're being thoughtful with your heart and your story.
Right. Especially if you're essentially becoming their entertainment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing about this is, like, to have your life parroted back to you when you aren't aware. I remember, like, when you were a kid and you knew you had to tell your parents something, and you're like walking around the kitchen, or you're sitting in the car and you're waiting for, like, okay, after this song, I'm going to turn down the volume and I'm going to share this thing.
Right.
But that's like, that's your decision. And sometimes you're just not in a place where you want to have everybody know, or you haven't processed your feelings. And I just feel like you can't have friendships that exist on a superficial level.
Yep.
Meaning, when you're with your friend, you want to be your whole self.
Mm-hmm.
And I would explain that to her as such. If you have to give a disclaimer before each sentence or change the names to protect the guilty or whatever is happening here, we're in a weird place. And I would also explain that relationships have tiers. And I've always wanted to actually talk about this on the show. I believe that people go in buckets, like not actual buckets like KFC, but, you know, kind of. So you have four buckets. You have your friends, your family, your colleagues, and your acquaintances. Now, people can go back and forth between buckets at different times.
Yeah.
But the roles people have are the roles they have and that they've earned.
Yep.
So if she keeps messing up, she needs to go to the final bucket, an acquaintance. And you don't want that from the sounds of it, and I bet she doesn't either. So you have to convey that to her. You are falling down on my list of people.
Right.
And the other side of that is I would check in on her. Like, I know that you're going through a difficult time from what you wrote to us, but there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to reciprocate friendship and see if there's anything that's changing in her life or anything that's prompting her to be this kind of person.
Right.
But I do think that in order to maintain the friendship, she needs to prioritize your feelings over her desire to be the town newspaper.
Right.
And if she can't do that, you know what bucket to put her in, and that's the dumpster.
Right. Amen.
In the words of Jamie Giddens, never trust a big butt and a smile, so I don't know why you trust my old grinning ass. I appreciate you writing us, but We got to get you some friends, girl.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. It sounds to me like you feel like there's not another person you could trust. But I guarantee that there is. And if you kind of cleaned house and created space in your friend group for somebody else, I bet you could find somebody who will be just as good of a friend to you as you need, as you are to other people.
And will honor you.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing, too. Because I would imagine that when you feel that you only have one person or one sounding board, that when that person gets shaky, you're just like, oh God, I have nothing.
Right.
And I'm sure that you do. You just have to, again, I think this makes people question themselves in a way that they don't want to. You want to know that you have your base and that your base is solid. It sounds like everything feels very shaky right now. And I'm glad that you could reach out to us. So thank you. Thank you for writing us, Who Can I Trust?
Yeah, and good luck.
And good luck. Any of you listening, if you have a question that you need answered, please yell at us at swirlpodcast@gmail.com. Well, you don't actually have to yell at us. We can just let you talk in low dulcet tones. But you can contact us at swirlpodcast@gmail.com or on the social. We're at Swirl Podcast on Twitter and at Swirl Podcast on the Facebook. Now, Ruby, we have come to the end of the show, and we like to give people something that they can use to motivate themselves as they leave our church, our digital online church known as the Swirl.
Yes.
So I'd like to send people home with something we like to call the good word.
And here we
go. Talk to me, Reverend.
Here we go. Quote.
Reverend Ruby.
Our good word comes from Raina Biddy. It's quote, "You're supposed to be wherever you are right now, in this moment. Don't fault yourself for not being anywhere other than here. Focus on right now. Focus on today. Make the best out of everything. Make the best out of everything you're already involved with. The future will slowly present itself as you begin to appreciate all you have and all that you are in this moment. Please, don't rush life. Anything that's meant for you will always be eventually. Be patient."
And who's that author?
Raina Biddy. It's R-E-Y-N-A-B-I-D-D-Y.
Well, I like what Raina had to say. That's fantastic.
Yep.
And everybody, thank you for joining us for yet another week of our foolishness. As always, Ruby is on the Twitter @RubyJunkie. I'm on Twitter @StepToTheMic. And we are on Twitter @SwirlPodcast.
Yes, and thanks and lots of love to our pod squad, our friends Justine and Tim, who make our lives so much better and help us hype the Swirl. And we love listening to you. We love hearing from you guys. We love listener clapback and Q&As. Feel free to tweet us, send us a note on Facebook, or email us swirlpodcast@gmail. And you guys know the deal. The party doesn't end.
It just relocates. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Take care of yourselves.
And each other.
Oh, yeah.
Who am I, Jerry Springer?